In this episode, we hear from Adam Dean. Adam is going to be the head of the new free special school in Essex called the Chatham Free School. And he talks about his experiences of autism, explains a bit more about ABA, and talks about his own book. Okay, so Adam, when you first started at Markerfield, I'd been there a couple of years, and you started as a class teacher and then kind of worked your way, working more specifically with the children with severe learning difficulties and autism. What kind of inspired you to go that way, Adam, and what led you down that path?
Oh, that's a really good question. So, I mean, when I did my teacher training, which feels like a long, long time ago now, my original intention was that I would end up teaching mainstream year six. And I considered the idea that I might end up teaching science or maths in secondary. Okay. And then for my second to last placement, I did a 2-week placement at Columbus.
Yep.
In a year four class with SLD pupils, and absolutely loved it. Like, absolutely loved it. And at the time I thought, okay, well, this is it then. This is what I want to do. Yeah. I loved the fact that I got that more close contact with those pupils, that I got to spend that time with them, and I enjoyed helping them with what I felt was really profound steps in their learning. And then I thought, okay, well, that's what I want to do. So I thought, I'll go off and I'll get 2 years mainstream under my belt. And I went off and did that. And while I did that, I absolutely loved teaching the SEND pupils that I had in mainstream. And then I went for a job at Marketfield and loved it from the moment I got in there, and loved working with the kids that I worked with. But even then, I knew about the autism bases. I kind of always wanted to go down that road. So when the opportunity came up, I went straight for it. And loved it ever since.
In case anyone listening, and obviously each school will work differently, and the way you know they provide the provision works different. Autism bases. What do we mean by that when we're talking about them at Marketfield? Can you explain a bit about them?
Yeah. So the autism bases are for pupils whose learning needs are possibly more profound than some of the pupils in the other area of the school. Often, but not always, they are, I like to use the word pre-vocal rather than pre-verbal.
Yep.
Because they've probably got verbal behavior. They communicate, but they're not vocal, as in they're not speaking, or they're spoken behavior or spoken communications more limited. They're usually smaller classes, and the staffing ratios a little bit higher than it is in other parts of the school, because the type of support they need is different. And sometimes, but not always, it comes with some challenging behavior as well, or behavior that challenges. So it's a different type of challenge to other places, but I absolutely love it.
You can hear the passion when you talk about it, even from the early steps in your teaching career. So you've obviously, as you say, you've led on that side of things, and now you're looking to, or you will be leading a free school, the Chatham school. Can you tell us a little bit about where that idea came from and your vision for the school?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like the idea came from numerous different places at once. And I think there was a few different people thinking similar things. And we worked with, so I had a thought going on in my head. And I think some people at County, and I know Gary Smith also did. And we ended up working with another a parent group called Springboard. But for me, the origin was actually based on an ex-pupil who I worked with for a number of years, who was absolutely fantastic. His vocal communication was quite limited, and some of his communication was behavioral. So he hadn't found ways to communicate certain things. So his behavior was what communicated those needs. And when he left us at Marketfield, there wasn't really anywhere at the time that he could go to. And we've had a couple of other pupils in similar circumstances. And my assumption at the time was, well, if there's one of these or a couple of these at this school, then there must be more of them. And there must be pupils that are younger versions, that if we got the right interventions and the right education in place, maybe they'll be different when they get to a certain age. Maybe if we can get them when they're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and teach them communication skills, then they won't get to a point when they're older where they're needing to use behavior to communicate those things, or if we can help them to manage anxieties in a certain way, then maybe when they get to that age, they'll be able to go out with their families and things like that.
Yeah.
So the vision for me was and is still is about addressing the individual needs of the pupils so that they can be as independent as possible in later life. Yeah. And when we're talking about pupils whose learning needs are really very profound and they've not got any spoken communication, those needs vary wildly. So it could be, I'm not talking about specific examples here, but I'm sort of coming up with a couple of fictional examples. But yeah, say we've got a pupil that came to us 14 and is terrified of cats, for example, and they'd be surprised that happens. Yep. If their parents take them out into the community, they're a big lad or big lady, and they see a cat, their reaction is to run away. And we've come across that with pupils that are scared of animals or children. That then means that for that child, they're not able to go out into the community unless their parents are able to keep them safe. But they're a big person. So
yeah,
they're going to get bigger. You know, one day they're going to be 32, 35. And if they're at home or if they're in adult social care, that's going to be a big factor in their freedom and their ability to access the world. And I suppose that's what it's really about for me, is being able to access the world. So for me, then, if we've got that pupil and that's a need, then we can focus on that need. That then becomes a huge thing. I mean, one thing that I always come up with when I'm talking about this is communication and the ability to communicate basic needs. It is so important. And there's so many people that get to sort of 16, 17, 18, and they still can't ask for their favorite crisps or their favorite chocolate bar.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, anywhere you go, I love steak. I can ask for steak anywhere. Sometimes people are going to say, no, you can't have steak. This is Costa. But I'm allowed to ask for it. Yeah. And then the next step for that is being able to cope with being told, no, you can't have it.
Yeah.
And that's something. And really the focus is be able to teach our pupils to get the most joy and the most out of life that they possibly can. So when I'm talking about independent skills, yes, that includes cooking and it includes showering and it includes sorting out your sock drawer, but it goes a lot deeper than that. It goes to the ability to access the world, the ability to communicate what you need with others around you, and also to be healthy and safe. So to be able to go to the doctors. Yeah. And you know, there are pupils that can't go to the dentist and they end up with abscesses and all sorts. Well, we built into that model that we want a pretend medical room.
Okay.
So we can practice that. So we can practice going to the dentist. We can slowly fade in things like having something in your mouth, because that's a horrible sensation. And I think that's the other thing, is it might be in that particular circumstance for that pupil, it might be an uncomfortable situation for them. So they may be really nervous of going to the dentist because they hate having that thing in their mouth. We know that in order to be happy and healthy, that needs to happen. So rather than say, you've got three options. You've got, okay, well, they can't do that, so that won't happen. We've got we'll have to make it happen, which isn't an option because it's horrible and it doesn't work. Or we've got let's slowly fade in that particular stimulus so that they become more comfortable and their anxiety is managed in that situation. And sorry, I'm rabbiting on.
No, you're not at all. It's really interesting to hear, because you mentioned at the start about those profound steps that are so important for the young people we work with. And you've highlighted just how in life those steps can then, you know, ensure they access all the things that a lot of us take for granted every single day. Mm. The big word, Adam, that you keep mentioning, and quite rightly, is communication.
Mm-hmm.
So in case there's people listening to this and they think, you know what, I might have interacted with someone before who doesn't always show as if they've got, you know, communication skills, or if any, how do you guys help those children to communicate the things that we do take for granted?
Okay, that's another good question. So I suppose I think part of it is first working out what they are trying to communicate. And I need to separate their intentional communication and what we take as a communication of need. So behavior, I wouldn't say was an intentional communication, but if we analyze that behavior, we can tell what it's for, what the function of that behavior is. So if every time you give, and I'm not even necessarily talking about a profound learner here, If every time you give little Johnny, who's in mainstream school, year six, a piece of maths, he throws the chairs everywhere, and you analyze that, you can start to work out that, okay, little Johnny is struggling with maths, and yeah. that's what he's communicating. But when we're talking about the learners that we're working with at Chatham, it's about working out exactly what it is that they want, which can be difficult. And there are ways of doing that. And there are things called preference assessments and things along those lines, where you sort of, you've got an idea of what a pupil likes or enjoys, and you can present those things at different times to see which ones they like. Because really, in teaching communication, you want to make sure the person that you're working with is motivated to communicate that, because you're teaching something, and teaching and learning is effort for the person that's doing it.
Yeah.
So we might be teaching, PECS, so which is a picture communication system, which is exchanging. We could be teaching Makaton. We might be developing vocals. All of those things are going to be more effort than whatever has been used so far.
Yeah.
So we need to make sure the thing we're using is really powerful. Maybe we're teaching, to start with, we're teaching their favorite food. And food is always a good place to start. It's not somewhere you want to carry on with forever. It's a good place to start because everyone loves food.
Yeah.
And it is, take it right back to the very first step, it would be a case of making sure that's something they actually do like. And that's where people fall down quite often. And you make sure you've got a communication system which is functional to them. So if they've got problems with fine motor skills, you're not going to use Makaton, for example.
Yeah.
But if they've got some basic vocals, then you might want to develop those. And then it's a case of, if we're using PECS, it would be a case of someone standing behind and hand over hand, putting the hand on the cymbal and doing the exchange. And that's about teaching the purpose of communication. Because the first thing that you have to learn is that if I use this sign, this vocal, this whatever, this will get me something, or get, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's that intent of communication.
They know where it's going to lead, yeah.
Exactly.
It backs up when we've spoke to some young people who have been able to verbalize for them what it's like to have autism. All the time they've said it's so individual for each person. And that's what you're saying. You're talking about, you know, it's about finding out what works for that individual and what's going to support
absolutely
them.
Absolutely, 100%.
Brilliant. I just want to touch on something else as well, ABA. So ABA is something that is spoken about. I've had brief conversations with parents who have asked me, and I have to be really honest, ABA is not something that I know huge amounts about. Could you just sum up a little bit about ABA and what it is?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, ABA stands for Applied Behavior Analysis. And in that sense, it is what it says on the tin. It's just a very big and complicated tin. So it's the application of behavior analysis. If you think crudely that medicine is the application of chemistry and biology, applied behavior analysis is the application of behavior analysis.
Okay.
And much like medicine and things like that, its application has evolved and changed over the years. So ABA now, versus ABA in the 60s, is very different. So it's a growing thing. There's quite a large organization called the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, and people that practice it are either supervised or should be actually something called a board certified behavior analyst. They follow quite a strict ethics code. Really though, ABA is about applying the science of behavior, which is constantly evolving, like all sciences, towards the betterment support of an individual.
Okay.
So it's or a group of individuals. So it's about finding ways to use that science to help. And that's that is really what it's about.
Yeah.
It has to be analytical in nature, which means if you're doing ABA, you take a lot of data. But that's because ethically, we have to know that what we're doing is effective.
Yeah.
So if we take, for example, sometimes it's easier to talk about a pupil in a mainstream school and how it might be applied. Token economy systems or sticker charts, they're very commonly used. And in fact, they are one of the products or technologies of behavior analysis. Token economy comes from that. the process there would be to sit down with little Johnny. I always talk about little Johnny. I've never actually taught a little Johnny, I don't think. and to say to them, and to say to their teacher, you know, what is it that we need to do here? Like, you're struggling with this lesson, or you're struggling with this. We need to help you to do more work, or to ask for help more often, or et cetera, et cetera. And then we might introduce a token economy. And if we were saying we were trying to improve how focused little Johnny is on his maths, and there's probably lots of other things going on in here, like being able to ask for a break and all sorts of other stuff. But we might say, okay, little Johnny, part of what we're doing with your maths is we're going to put in this token economy to help you be more focused. Yeah. And if you do 5 questions, you get a token. If you get 5 tokens, you get 5 minutes on the iPad. That's a familiar story to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we'll do that. Now, what we're going to do that outside of behavior analysis is less likely to happen is we're going to take data on that. So we're going to actually tick or cross if he did those 5 questions, or how long it took to do those 5 questions, or was he focused for this 5 minutes? And we're going to see. And if it improves, then we know what we're doing is working.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can start to fade it back. If it doesn't improve, then we know that we've done something wrong. Yeah. And I think that's the key, is if we've taken data, we know that the intervention we've put in place hasn't worked. Yeah. So we're going to change that intervention. Because it isn't working for little Johnny. So we're going to say, all right, to start with, every 2 questions you get a token, or you only need 3 tokens, or you get 10 minutes on the iPad. And we know then we'll take data and we know that it's working. All of the applications of behavior analysis is about knowing that it works or it doesn't work. And then it's about fading it back if you can. There's lots of different applications to it. Things people will be familiar with will be things like ABC charts. PECS has its origins in applied behavior analysis. Positive behavior support. CBT has some of its origins in behavior analysis as well. Clearly, I could talk about it for hours, but I'll shut up now.
No, it's good because, as I said, when people have asked me before, I've not known enough detail to speak confidently about it. However, now hearing you explain it in that way, it makes much more sense.
If people are interested in learning more about it, there is a UK organisation called the UK Society for Behaviour Analysts.
Great.
That's a good place to start. And there are lots of different applications, and it's not the tabletop work that people imagine it to be.
Yeah.
It's a lot more complicated than that.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you, Adam, as well, is because sometimes there could be a lot of misconceptions out there about lots of different things. And that's why we're doing these podcasts. So really, really useful. I wanted to finish by talking about some books, because I know, as well as being fantastically knowledgeable about autism and everything that is around it, you also have written some books. And the year 6 class I had last year particularly enjoys the tale of the mechanical space dragon. But I know you've written some others as well, and quite recently as well, more towards the stuff that you've just been talking about. Could you just tell us a little bit about the books you've written and explain a bit more about them?
Yeah, absolutely. Quite recently, self-published a book called Supporting Behavior with Science, Classroom Behavior. The idea being that it's part of a series of books for teachers and perhaps parents on using the science of behavior to support, and this particular one's aimed at whole class behavior. So it came out of quite a lot of outreach that I was doing, that I've done in different schools. For a while, that was my role. It was brilliant. I got to meet loads of amazing people, amazing teachers. And a lot of the stuff that was coming up was coming up fairly often. I thought, well, we'll write this down and we'll put this in a book and we'll self-publish it.
Yeah.
So it uses ABA as the core of it, and it starts by going through the concepts and an understanding of what is reinforcement, what is extinction, what is taking data, et cetera, et cetera. And then it looks at specific tools.
Okay.
So the idea is that I explain the concept of the science of behavior, and then I say, right, how can we apply this to actually help you in the classroom? One example is chapter on behavior contracts, which again is a really familiar concept in schools, but sometimes if they're tweaked, they can be really, really, really effective. And it's a case of saying, well, okay, let's break down this behavior contract and apply the science of behavior. And it's things like, okay, well, first of all, let's look at the actual rules, because there's a thing in applied behavior analysis called rule-governed behavior.
Yeah.
And the first thing we have to establish is, well, what are these rules? What is expected? What is a contract? It's an agreement between two parties.
Yeah.
So then we need to say, is there something that you're saying you're going to do if your class agrees to follow these rules?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is it you're agreeing to do? Let's get this. And then it goes through the process of taking the data. And I try and provide less labor-intensive ways of taking data. But the idea really is to introduce usually quite familiar concepts, but with instructions on how to adapt and manipulate those systems and those interventions so that they're as effective as possible. There's all these little things that you can do to tweak that. And really, it's to, the idea is to try and empower people to change what they're doing, or to find ways to adapt what already is brilliant and is already going on. And then eventually to try and fade that back and to teach self-management, which is something, you know, we're all still working on as adults. So yeah, that is really the idea of it.
Okay, brilliant. So if people want to go and purchase the book, Adam, what's the easiest way of doing that?
The easiest way is on Amazon, and it's available on Kindle as well as paperback copies, although I think people have preferred to have the paper in their hands, which is fair enough. Yeah, if you type in Classroom Behavior Adam Dean, that will come up with it at the top. And it's just called Supporting Behavior with Science, Classroom Behavior.
Fantastic. That's really, really helpful, Adam. You've touched on lots of different areas there and given lots of knowledge, inside knowledge onto, you know, different things that a lot of the time are misunderstood by others. So I'm sure parents, even some children as well, hopefully listen to this and they'll be able to learn and take a lot from it. So thank you very much, Adam.
That's okay. Can I just say hello to all our Marketfield pupils?
Absolutely.
You're all amazing, and looking forward to seeing you again.
Thank you, Adam.
Okay. All right, cheers. Then. All right. Cheers. Lovely to talk to you, Kieran.
Yeah, you
take
too,
care.
Mate. Take care.
Bye.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.